This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Welcome to another edition of MIP on 89.3 WPFW FM Pacifica Radio. Glad to be here with you. As always, Reverend Mark Matsumela here with you. So much going on. And first of all, I know you just heard Joni's show, and we all lift up the name and the memory of Asada Shakur, and all she represented, her resistance, her freedom fighting. And we lift up all those who defended her and stood with her over the years. What an example she set. So we lift her up and say, Ashe. We are, and obviously those of you want to share comments on there, 202-588-0893, as we do think about and lift up the memory of Asada Shakur. We want to talk about some of the important matters before us today, both on Capitol Hill and actually in Virginia as well, because there's a gubernatorial election coming up. Joining us now, a dear friend and colleague in the media, Black Press, USA.com, also the host of her own show and her own newsletter. We'll let her tell you all about that, though. Lauren Victoria Burke. Lauren, how are you? Welcome back to Make It Plain. How are you, dear sister?
And how are you doing, Mark? Thanks for having me again.
It's a pleasure to have you. First of all, let's talk about the Hill. You're the Capitol Hill correspondent, in fact, for BlackPressUSA.com. What's going on with the continuing resolution and what seems to be an inevitable government shutdown?
Well, what's going on is a big meeting at the White House today between President Trump and the leaders in the House and Senate, which would be Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries on the Democratic side, and on the Republican side, Senator John Thune and Speaker Mike Johnson. So I can't say that there's high hopes for that meeting, because generally what happens at these meetings is a lot of, frankly, ranting and raving by the president. But the president did agree to the meeting. The White House did contact the Democrats for the meeting after they had been asking for it several times. So in that sense, it's a good sign, because what it tells you is that at least there is some willingness to at least have a conversation before shutting the entire government down. But as you know, Mark, as I don't need to tell you, part of Project 2025 is a mass reduction of the federal government. The second that Donald Trump entered office, he started doing that. He started laying off federal workers by the thousands. So a government shutdown plays right into the hands of that project and that strategy. I actually think the Republicans, at least in the White House, want to shut the government down and want to lay off and or fire thousands and thousands of more federal employees. So incredibly, on this same day, there's going to be a meeting once again with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. So those two meetings are happening at the White House at the same time. I can't say that they don't have anything to do with each other, because we are a country that is giving billions and billions of dollars to other countries overseas, while at the same time arguing that we cannot provide health care for our own citizens. So even though those two meetings do not have a direct connection to each other, certainly the money that will be paid out likely later after the meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu does factor into the thinking of a lot of people. You are seeing some movement from the Republican side against Israel and these payouts, by the way. So that's something to look for.
So where are we on process, though, Lauren? I think they're going to vote tonight, correct?
I don't think they're doing anything tonight. The House is not officially in session. The Republicans are out of session. The government funding expires on Wednesday. Okay, so October 1st, I mean, the night at midnight, the night before October 1st, the government funding expires. It has to be voted on to keep funding the government. You either fund for an extension, okay, you either come in and fund for, and vote on an extension, which, of course, is a pre-agreed agreement, right? So it's not like you just come in and, okay, wow, we're voting. I mean, they've got to sit down and figure out what that extension is, what it means, and what the details are. And I suspect that that's what will be discussed today at the White House. In the past, what we know, and I don't need to tell the audience, that that has typically been a fiasco. Once again, you have a Republican Party that is really waved goodbye to governance in the last 10 years. So governance to them is to constantly be discussing how everything is dysfunctional and the government needs to be completely changed. They're not bringing a lot of policy ideas other than to greatly shrink and reduce the government, which, of course, has led to 300,000 Black women connected to jobs in the federal government being out of a job. I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of Black men, too, involved in that, by the way. But that's that came across a few weeks ago, as reported by NBC. You know, as you know, there's been a history of Black people being connected to federal government jobs. It wasn't just the Postal Service. I mean, other federal government jobs. This administration has a bullseye on the Black community and economics and money. And so from the congressional standpoint, the Democratic Party, whether you are Black, white, you know, Democrats from the North, South, East, and West, they are trying to get the government funded. They know that health care is on the table. There's the major question is the extension of tax credits for health care coverage, which the Republicans are now articulating that they could care less about, at least the Republicans sitting in the White House. And really, the Republicans sitting in the White House are the only Republicans that matter, because the ones sitting in the Congress are not pushing back on their colleagues in the White House. So whatever happens with regard to what the president says will be the process moving forward for the Republican Party. Part of that process, though, is that what happens in the Senate requires six Democrats to agree. They need a 60-vote margin to move forward. So Chuck Schumer holds a lot of cards here. So in the past, he has capitulated to the Republicans. He says he's not going to do that now. We'll see. We'll see.
If he does not capitulate, Lauren, and folks, your calls, 202-588-0893, would Democrats then bear the characterization that they shut down the government? I'm just asking.
Well, of course, the Democrats are arguing that the Republicans have shut down the government. The Republicans control the entire government, including the Supreme Court. So the Republicans control, of course, the House, the Senate, the White House, and the Supreme Court. So it's hard to argue, it would seem to me, that the Democrats shut down the government. Of course, the Republicans are going to say that. The problem, of course, is, Mark, as you know, as somebody who's a communications professional in so many ways, the Democrats are unable to manage their messaging, because so much of messaging now is predicated on lying and misinformation and disinformation. So the truth can be whatever you say it is, but it's really what you can market to the public and what the public believes, as we found out on Jan 6, 2021. People believed falsely and with no evidence that the election was stolen. If you get people to believe that, they end up violently attacking the U.S. Capitol. So one of the things that the Republicans are clearly better than the Democrats is messaging and getting people to believe things. So it will not surprise me that the Republicans will try to get the public to believe that the Democrats shut down the government, even though the Republicans control the entire federal system.
Well, but here's the thing, though, Lauren, and I asked that question, I'm sure you can guess for a reason. What would be so bad about that? Don't Democrats need to show some backbone anyway? I mean, they have a gun to their head on every occasion. Some of them, Lord have mercy. And I hate to say, you know, when folks, when family members do something so bad, you can't even mention it because you're ashamed and embarrassed. You know, it's one thing to be angry. Like I say, Lauren and I are brothers, sisters, and I do something so bad. It's one thing for Lauren to be angry at me, but it's nothing Lauren can't even talk about because I'm her. But say, how could you do that? It's just, it's you don't even really want nobody to know. I don't want nobody to know some of these Black Caucus members voted for the Charlie Kirk resolution. We know some of them people, Lauren. That hurt. I don't even know. Dick Gregory said, don't even bring it to me. I don't want to hear about it. I don't even want to even know. So, but for a change, though, maybe be good for Democrats to be seen as standing up, showing some resistance and some backbone, would it not?
Absolutely. Particularly coming off the Charlie Kirk resolution, in which the Democratic leadership, all three leaders, voted in favor of that resolution in honor of Charlie Kirk, including Hakeem Jeffries of Crown Heights, Brooklyn. The reasons for that and the way that this looks is I think not as complicated as some of these leaders in Congress think. I just think sometimes what happens is people are hanging around with the same three aides that they have in their office and listening to them and not realizing what it looks like when they make a decision. Okay, so the week of the Charlie Kirk resolution was the week where the leadership in the Democratic Party in the House told their members to talk about healthcare, to talk about the fact that healthcare was going to be cut if the government was not funded, that there was going to be a, you know, big disaster, which there will be if those tax credits are not continued. People's healthcare premiums are probably going to double in the case of hundreds of thousands of people. So, what happens there is they get wrapped around the axle on that. Then they have a caucus meeting, which a member gets up from Rhode Island, who happens to be trans, to argue that if you don't vote in favor of the Charlie Kirk resolution, which of course was worded in a political way that sort of avoids all of the racism and all of the misogyny of Charlie Kirk's statements and just wants to talk about political violence. Well, no one I know of that I've talked to in the House, whether it be a MAGA Republican or a liberal Democrat, is in favor of political violence. Okay. And I talked to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I talked to some of the people who are on the far right, and nobody is for political violence. So that never really actually needed to be voted on in the first place. The idea that you can disassociate Charlie Kirk's statements in the public realm, which he's concentrated on so much with regard to race and all sorts of things that sound like the 1950s era of the Ku Klux Klan, calling certain racial groups stupid and not having mental capacity, so forth and so on, is impossible. You can't divorce him as you can't divorce the person from that resolution. Unfortunately, we had several Democrats that got wrapped around the axle, including, I think, Leader Jeffries. So what ends up happening is, the party looks as if they can't stand for anything. There is an open question, unfortunately, about what the Democratic Party actually stands for. Okay, because I cannot imagine if Charlie Kirk was Louis Farrakhan, if Charlie Kirk was someone who had said some controversial things and died in a very tragic way, and there was a resolution, that people would divorce the words of that person from that resolution. I can't imagine that happening with anyone else. So I'm very, although most of the CBC members, as I wrote in Black Press USA, voted against the resolution. They were leaned on very heavily by their leadership. Many of them were told to, quote, take a walk and disappear into the cloakroom and don't vote. And to their credit, most of the CBC members overwhelmingly voted against the Charlie Kirk resolution, to their credit in terms of not listening to their leadership and what the leadership gets, you know, confused by, which is typically polls, by the way. So that was a very interesting moment, I think a very telling moment for the Democratic Party.
Yeah. It most certainly is. 202-588-0893, folks, if you've got calls and questions for Lauren. Lauren is the Capitol Hill correspondent for BlackPressUSA.com. And tell us the other things that you're involved in, Lauren, your show, your newsletter, all of that, please.
Well, I've got a newsletter I own called Black Virginia News that I founded in 2022. So I cover Virginia news, not just politics, but often sports. We have Michael Vick down in Norfolk State, so I've been talking about him a lot. And that's very exciting for Virginia. And then I have a show that I just started on YouTube called Lauren Live, which is on my YouTube channel, which is Lauren Victoria Burke. It's fairly easy to find. And I'm on Roland Martin from time to time. had a great time this weekend, as I'm sure you did, Mark, for CBC Week. A very interesting collision of sequin and very heavy issues sitting in the background for the Black community, to say the least. We found ourselves at a time that really matches the era of Woodrow Wilson.
Mm.
Or maybe after the Civil War, maybe matches after the Civil War, the Redeemers. So what I think we're watching is the second coming of the Redeemers, actually.
Yeah. The period of redemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was strange, and I couldn't stay all this weekend. I had another speaking engagement, but it was a different kind of vibe. You know, whenever you have John Kerry once described the CBC Annual Legislative Conference as the most glittering event every year in all of Washington. Mm-hmm. And there's probably no doubt about that. But it's kind of like Frankie Beverly's song, Joy and Pain. It was a little, I mean, it's good to see everybody, it was a little hollow. And, you know, and we've been watching a long time. Once you've been to one CBC conference, you've been to all of them. But it's hollow when you don't have power and when you are dealing with people who are literally trying to take you out every day and exactly. celebrating the Charlie Kirks of the world. So I don't know. I was there Friday. It was strange. It was a little bit different. I was in Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, I mean, it was strange. I mean, I think there's an open question for all involved, whether you're an elected official or a leader of a legacy civil rights group in particular, not to say that our new civil rights group can't answer these questions. But the question is, what is the strategy to protect the Black community? That is the question. To me, if I'm not at a panel discussion that's not going over that, I'm either walking out 5 minutes in or not walking in at all. There were some discussions that got to that. But, you know, we have a situation in Virginia where we have two people running for governor that aren't answering any of those questions. And that is problematic because this is now, particularly for the Democratic candidate, the former Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, because it is not enough to stand up in front of an audience and say things like, I want to protect affordability. The federal government is attacking the Black community on a daily basis, not just history, not just perfunctory or performative things. They're attacking the money. They're attacking any grant program. You know, there's a grant program for prenatal care. Let's pull the money. I mean, they're pulling money on things that aren't even really all that political, you know. But anything that has any sort of indication that it might help someone Black or brown, for that matter, too, they are cutting the money. They're very specific in that. So the question becomes, on the state level in particular, what are our elected officials doing and what are our legacy civil rights leaders doing? And they have been stone silent, I think, in part because corporate money and corporate buy-in has greatly compromised the power of a lot of these civil rights groups to the point where they're not saying anything. I mean, you can't go through life not offending anybody. And in fact, not offending anybody is probably a sign you're not effective, quite frankly. I mean, somebody's got to get pissed off. You've got to take a stand. And as they say in the 60s, this is a time for choosing. Whose side are you on is the question. So there's a lot of happening that is under the surface of celebration. And as somebody who has partaked in many of these events, I mean, it is inescapable. The state of play for Black America right now.
Yeah. 202-588-0893. So, folks, Lauren is there on the Hill and reporting on the Hill just about every day. We'll see what comes of this. One. Two, we got to talk about Virginia and this gubernatorial race. First of all, Virginia continues to be a very bizarre state. if for no other reason than that, you know, that a governor cannot concede oneself. Cannot succeed oneself. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the race there and how that's shaping up between Spanberger and Winsome Earle Sears. Lord have mercy.
Well, Winsome Earle Sears is the sitting lieutenant governor, the first Black female lieutenant governor in the history of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We only had three Black lieutenant governors, the first being L. Douglas Wilder. And the second being Justin Fairfax, who, full disclosure, I worked for as his communications director. And now the third Republican, Winsome Earle Sears. She is running for governor, which is, you know, that's sort of automatic when you're lieutenant governor, you're running for governor in Virginia. And her governor that she ran with pulled off a dramatic and really actually stunning victory in 2021, who's now the sitting governor, Glenn Youngkin. She's trying to ride partially on his coattails. He has been very supportive. He's been in ads. He's been at events. He is definitely assisting Lieutenant Governor Sears to win. He's not been a ghost or anything like that. It is a difficult race in the climate where you have a backdrop of Donald Trump in the background for any Republican. She is not expected to win. Winsome Sears is expected to lose. The favorite in this race is Abigail Spanberger, who has been ahead in the polls, ahead in every poll. I haven't found one poll that she hasn't been ahead in, and I've been sizably ahead by 10 points, by 5 points, by 7 points, hitting 51 and 52% in one poll. So, I mean, it is Abigail Spanberger's race to lose. She's a former member of Congress, a former CIA agent. The problem with the race, though, is that there is no articulation with any specificity on issues by either candidate, with the exception of Winsome Earle Sears' obsession with trans issues with regard to who uses what bathroom and whether or not a biological male may or may not be disrobing in front of girls in a locker room. That's what she's talked about most, more than anything. And I can tell you, as somebody who has knocked doors and been with people who've knocked doors, these are issues that generally do not come up at the door, okay? When you knock doors or talk to people who are blue-collar in Richmond or Hampton or Norfolk, what they bring up is bread-and-butter issues that have to do with money, things like the car tax. Virginia has a car tax, which is annoying for everybody, Democrat and Republican. It does so happen that Winsome Sears is pushing the end of the car tax in Virginia. But the bottom line of it is Sears is expected to lose. Abigail Spanberger is expected to win. And if anything happens that isn't that outcome, it would be a shock.
Yeah. As you said no issues are really being discussed.
Well,
are you serious?
I'll say it this way. Very sort of formulaic general statements about things like, I want to lower your affordability and your grocery bills. And, Virginians, I care about your children and education. We're not talking deep discussions of issues in a way that you would typically see in a campaign. Part of this is the media's failing in a lot of ways. But, to the credit of both candidates, they have accepted interviews from the local Virginia press that have asked about specific issues. It does seem they're only going to be having one debate, which would be craziness if that's the case. I mean, they've been at, quote, forums, but, you get a forum maybe at a church or something like that. You're not getting hard-hitting detailed questions that go to things that they're unlikely to be, faced with. I mean, I'll just give you an example. I don't know that anybody's asked Abigail Spanberger whether or not she agrees or disagrees with the activity of ICE as conducted under the Trump administration. I mean, that's a pretty obvious thing that's going on. One might think, well, that's a federal issue, not a state issue. Well, no, it's actually a state issue because the federal government is asking the states to participate in kidnapping people and renditioning them to El Salvador. So are you as governor going to be for that or against it? One would assume Abigail Spanberger would be against it. But Abigail Spanberger likes to brag that she was a cop and a CIA agent. And got the endorsement, interestingly enough, of the FOP, and likes to brag about law enforcement. When she was in Congress, was quite critical of Black Lives Matter and any conversation about defund, which, as we know, is not just a conversation about defund. It's a conversation about where does the money go? Where does public money go? Does it go into the billions, into police overtime like it does in New York? Or does it go into social services and education, et cetera, and so on? That's the question that a lot of these Democrats like to avoid because they want to be seen as pro-police. I get it. I mean, I'm the daughter of a cop, a New York City cop, and my nephew was a cop in Virginia Beach, and my boyfriend is a federal police officer. I like police too. But the question is the allocation of public funds, that usually a police department is the number one or number two allocation in a lot of these bigger cities. And so, nobody wants to speak against cops. Nobody wants to criticize cops. But we in the Black community should be asking questions when we see video after video of Eric Garner getting choked out or Walter Scott getting shot in the back or George Floyd getting choked out. We should be asking a few questions, as would any other community that has to watch their community members treated that way by what is a government funded and a government entity, the police.
I think we just had some other breaking news, though. This may actually be the viral part of this show. Mm-hmm. Whether you meant to or not, Lauren. Lauren, breaking news, has just announced that she has a boyfriend. Was that public yet before you said that? Or
that was public because I bring him up a lot.
I missed that. I'm sorry. I thought I may have had something else break. You know, when people announce relationships, they'd be blue. Remember when Coco Gauff found her boyfriend? I thought I was about to have one of those viral moments with you. But you said, I didn't know it was already out there like that. Farewell.
It's out.
But so let me go back to these mm-hmm. Democrats and milquetoast behavior.
Right.
Is it a possibility that even, you know, spam Abigail being so nonspecific or, you know, amorphous, we see that with Democratic candidates a lot.
Right.
You can see, remember, as of Congress, is that not also one of the flaws in the party's culture? It's dependent on that consultant class, which seems to be saying to people, say as little as possible.
Absolutely.
So no one can criticize you for anything.
That's absolutely what's going on. I mean, it's the white consultant class. And the white consultant class is so connected to the decision making and the money that comes from these donors that it is becoming... it is actually becoming dysfunctional. Now, it's one thing, Mark, if you win elections. It's one thing if you're controlling the Senate. It's one thing if you won the White House over Donald Trump in 2016, and then you did it again in 2024. It's quite another thing when you don't have the Senate, you don't have the House, you don't have the White House. So for most people in politics, and I've been in media and politics, if you show results, everybody shuts up. If you win, everybody shuts up. The problem with this consulting class is that I don't even think they care anymore about who wins or loses, as long as they make the money, as long as they have the contract, as long as they can build a tunnel under their house in Georgetown. I don't think anybody cares. I mean, I really actually have come to that conclusion, because what tells me that is when the Democratic Party loses big, like they just did, particularly the way that they lost, having trouble figuring out that you can't run an 80-something-year-old man for the presidency for the second time, and you don't figure that out until 107 days before Election Day. With all your consultants and Jen O'Malley Dillon and all these people, Steve Ricchetti, they couldn't figure that out until 107 days before the election. That's a problem. And you don't hear anything about mass firings of consultants, do you? You don't hear anything about mass firings of people at DNC or DTRIP or anyplace else as a Democratic mm-hmm. entity. So that for me, and I think for a lot of people that I talk to in politics who've been around quite some time, is problematic. So the consultants tell these candidates, don't say anything, don't cause controversy. In a little bit of fairness to the candidates, I do understand some of that adjustment is about the current media age that we live in. Because if you say something controversial and it goes viral, it can blow up your entire campaign. So I totally understand why candidates have been hypersensitive, careful in this last 6 or 7 years, last 4 or 5 cycles. But at the same time, you're running for office. We need to know what you believe in and what you don't believe in. And hiding that is problematic. And for the Democrats, it is fatal. You'll notice on the Republican side, they're not hiding what they believe in. I want to fully fund Israel. I want these Mexicans out of the country. I want ICE to be funded into the billions. They're telling you what they believe in, whether you like it or not. It's the Democratic Party that remains a mystery, and that is problematic.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Talking about the Virginia governor's race, talking about the continuing resolution. I got to guess who's going to join us, Lauren. Just before we bring him on, though, just one more thing back to government. They shut this down. That would also give Trump even more ability to continue to fire federal workers, couldn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, which is exactly what he wants to do. Absolutely right.
Yeah. That's the other thing that's really kind of scary about this. 202-588-0893. Lauren Burke, Black Press USA. .com with us, representing the Black Press. Also joining us now, Lauren, and I stick around because I'm sure you have some mm-hmm. questions for this conversation, as we have had breaking news over the weekend when it comes to New York politics, the chair of Working Families Party, our dear brother, Dr. Maurice Mitchell. My brother, how are you?
Oh, I'm blessed. It's good to be with you.
It's good to be. Thank you for joining me on short notice, too. But I had to talk to you because this, I think there's a candidate's debate tonight. We have this mayoral race, which, and the landscape has changed overnight since Eric Adams has dropped out, Maurice.
Yeah, look, this is an important moment in the campaign. And what I'm excited about is that with Eric Adams dropping out, it's an opportunity to have a conversation about the fact that there is a critical election coming up. And the contrast to me is clear. And what we know now is that the Eric Adams era in New York governance will be ending, right? And so we're going to transition into a new era now. There's no question about that, given the fact that he dropped out. And so what people have, I think, is a real choice between Andrew Cuomo, what we at the Working Families Party believe is his record of corruption, his record of sort of top-down party boss leadership, and Zora Mamdani, which represents a new, refreshing, multiracial coalition that's focused like a laser on affordability, which is what, again and again and again, New Yorkers are interested in: how to stay in their homes, how to stay in their communities, how to be able to get by and actually thrive in New York.
So what impact do you think this will have on Mamdani's race itself? Because the votes are kind of all over the place. And we know that many Black New Yorkers went with Adams, right? The numbers showed that in the primary, correct?
Well, Adams didn't place himself in the primary for the scrutiny of the Democratic Party primary. He famously...
I mean Cuomo.
Yeah, Cuomo. That's right. That's correct. So, yeah, I mean, this is... So I'm 46, so I'll place myself in this age group of people my age and older who know the father, right? Know Mario Cuomo, know the son, have a relationship with that family. And when it came time to vote, voted with the name that you know during very uncertain times. At the end of the day, he lost the Democratic Party primary. And Zora Mamdani is the Democratic nominee. And over those weeks and months, that has given a lot of folks, including a lot of Black folks who knew the Cuomo family and had some relationship or trust with that name, to look at Zoran, to look at his policies. And, you know, the fact that Yvette Clark recently endorsed Zoran. You have Carl Heasty endorsed Zoran. Andrea Stewart Cousins endorsed Zoran. The Attorney General Tish James endorsed Zoran. There is a coalition that is coming together, a multiracial coalition, including a lot of very prominent Black voices that are endorsing Zoran and a part of this coalition. And I think since the primary, more and more everyday Black New Yorkers have been joining. And I think given the fact that Eric Adams is coming out, that is going to allow for even more folks to take a second look at Zoran and his policies. And like me, come to the conclusion that his policies are the best for Black New Yorkers and are the best positions to keep Black New Yorkers in our communities and in a path to thriving. He's the only candidate I know in the race that has a positive position on reparations. He came out while he was an assembly person on reparations. He's the candidate that is dealing directly with issues that relate to gentrification, which ultimately are issues about affordability, especially home prices, which his campaign is dealing with directly.
Yeah, yeah. Lauren Burke of Black Press USA, you have a question, or may I suggest you have a specific question about a prominent New York Democrat and his lack of endorsement at this point. Do you want to ask that question? Or you can ask?
Well, I probably should start with a few full disclosures. One is I do pay taxes on a house in Brooklyn and Crown Heights. Two is I voted for Andrew Cuomo, I think, three times. The primary for governor, when he was running for governor, you know, twice before changing my registration to Virginia. I was born in the Bronx. I grew up on Long Island. My father worked at Rikers and was a New York City police officer. So I'm actually a surprising fan of Andrew Cuomo. I will cap that full disclosure off by saying that my mother did work for a member of the New York State Assembly back in the day when I was a teenager, and I met Mario Cuomo. I never met Andrew when he was younger or when he was at HUD. But to get to your point, Mark, certainly everybody is waiting for the endorsement of the House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries. You know, I will just say that, you know, there's a few things at play there. One is it is a fact, and I live right outside of his district in Yvette Clark's district. But certainly the Orthodox Jewish community in Jeffries' district is very powerful in this, as they are not just in his district, but certainly nationally. With regard to AIPAC and the politics around Israel, there's no one that can convince me that that isn't a player in this decision with regard to endorsing or not endorsing Zoran Mamdani. But I would remind everybody that, you know, Jeffries has never been a big early endorser. I'd also remind that I'm unclear about what the views of Mr. Mamdani are on other Democrats, whether he's supported other Democrats in New York or nationally. I would love to know the history of that. And so this is not me saying that I think Jeffries is going to endorse former Governor Cuomo. I think the chances of that are zero. But I do think at some point he will be endorsing Mamdani. That's my guess. I ask him about it every week at the U.S. Capitol. He's sick of me. And, you know, he should be sick of me asking. But I think at some point he will be endorsing. The thing I would end with is, you know, I can see the excitement over Zoran Mamdani, and it's completely understood given the state of play of our politics, because he's somebody talking outside of the realm of money-controlled politics. It's that sort of talk that we heard from Bernie Sanders, we hear it from AOC, and when we hear it, we know that it is the thing that counters money politics, which is controlling everything on both sides of the aisle. At the same time, I do think the Democratic Party, and I'm just saying this as a former person who's worked in the party as well as journalist, the Democratic Party needs some ass kickers. They need some people that you don't necessarily want to hang out with at dinner. Okay. Andrew Cuomo is that person. I fully recognize where billionaire Roe is on upper, you know, in upper Manhattan. I know what billionaire Roe is. I know that Andrew Cuomo is connected to these people in a way that is not the greatest thing in the world. And I also realize that this is capitalism, and this is the way capitalism works. We live in a survival of the fittest society. And I think that that clash of the titans is about to happen in the city of New York. Believe me, I'm tempted to change my registration to participate. But I'm in New York and Brooklyn enough to see it close up. And this is going to be a very interesting vote. I think Mamdani wins, but it's going to be an interesting thing to see what happens after that. I know it's a lot, Maurice, but here you go.
let's start with the Hakeem Jeffries piece. Is that really what's going on, Maurice, the constituency? Well, how did Mamdani do in Hakeem's
district? He did well in Hakeem's district, actually. Zoran Mamdani did excellent in Hakeem Jeffries' minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries' district. And look, I can't peer inside of Hakeem Jeffries' heart or his mind to understand what the calculus is. However, what I will say, you know, Lauren, I couldn't agree more that moneyed politics informs and has captured American politics, both the politics of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and often putting the specific decisions of Hakeem Jeffries aside, often when you look at the decisions of a elected official, and it's kind of head scratching. When you understand the power of AIPAC, of AI, mm-hmm. of crypto, of the real estate lobby, of the pharmaceutical lobby, it all begins to make sense, right? Absolutely. And you know, I think, look, I've always, you know, I represent the Working Families Party, and we often engage in primaries, grassroots primaries of folks who don't come from the moneyed sort of pipelines into politics. And when our candidates lose during a primary, I often hear vote blue, no matter who, from folks who represent the, you know, the maybe corporate or more
three colors
wing of the Democratic Party. Well, if that's true then, it's true now. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see those same people lose their fire around the vote blue no matter who principle when it happens to be Zohran Mamdani. He doesn't represent those interests. And so I find that to be very, very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, at the end of the day, I hope that minority leader Jeffries will have conversations with Nydia Velazquez and, you know, Yvette Clark and Andre Stewart Cousins and Carl Heasty and Attorney General Tish James and many others who've come to the same conclusion that I have, that Zohran Mamdani represents the future. He's the Democratic nominee. He is the only candidate that we know that will provide a vigorous fight against Trump and isn't compromised by Trump. And the only thing I would say is, like, yes, Andrew Cuomo is, most people understand that Andrew Cuomo has earned the title the Dark Prince of Democratic politics for a reason, right? And, you know, there could be an argument that, like, all right, we send our bully up against their bully. However, we also know that he's compromised. And that creates, I think, a problem where we need a mayor of New York when the federal government and Trump is going blue city by blue city to invade blue city by blue city. We need a mayor that won't be compromised and will be willing to put up a fight.
Yeah, yeah. Folks, let's get some calls in. 202-588-0893. Maurice Mitchell, chair of the Working Families Party. Lauren Burke of BlackPressUSA.com, Capitol Hill correspondent, also covering much of Virginia, all of Virginia, too, as well. Caller, God bless you. You're on the air. What's your name? We can't hear the caller's mic.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead. What's your name, caller? Hello?
Yes, this is Ruth.
Hey, Ruth, go right ahead. Yes, we can hear you. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted her opinion on, you know, the rhetoric now is if a budget is not passed, then mass firings and layoffs will begin. Mm-hmm. My question is, why do we think he won't do that anyway, even if a budget is passed? Because when he came into office, there was a budget, and he still decimated the federal workforce. So why do we not believe that whatever budget is passed, he will take the funds and do whatever he decides to do with them, regardless of what the actual congressional budget is passed for? Because as we know, his colleagues on the Republican side are not going to stand up to him. And currently, there are not enough Democrats to make a difference. Thank you.
It's a good point.
Of course, we're talking about Trump now, y'all. So that's the question about Trump and the budget. Go right ahead, Lauren.
No, it's a good point the caller makes. And I saw Wes Moore last week at an event that Punchbowl News did last Thursday during CBC Week. And he made a good point, which was that in Maryland, we're in a shutdown right now. What difference does it make, right? Because, of course, the Trump administration makes decisions on funding, even if it's FEMA relief or anything else, based on whether it's a blue state or a red state. The job of this president so far has been to target specifically minority communities, specifically Black people, specifically immigrants from Mexico, with as much vitriol, hatred, and use of government police force as possible, particularly with regard to our immigrant communities. It is a shocking display, what we're seeing. It does require people to answer the question who are running on the ballot, whether it be in New York or any place else, how are you protecting these communities, particularly in a diverse place like New York, you know? And of course, in New York, you get some very interesting political partnerships because you have a historic group there, several historic groups that know what it looks like when a government turns against the minority group, okay? So it would be interesting actually to hear Governor Cuomo on some of that because I think that he's always sort of trying to straddle the line between, of course, the establishment and trying to be Billy Badass. Now, I do think that he can, to some extent, do that. One of the good things about an older politician is they get to a point where they just don't care. But back to the caller's point, the caller is right. The federal government, as run by Donald Trump and Stephen Miller and Laura Loomer, three racists, is going to continue to cut jobs, is going to continue to exact as much pressure and as much vitriol as they can on Black and brown communities in particular. And that federal government piece was not an accident. A lot of Black folks gain wealth through the federal system because the TSP program alone is one of the biggest builders of wealth and millionaires, slow building millionaires than almost any program in the country. So that's a good point.
And just bring it back to New York, Maurice Mitchell. I mean, that's one of the things that helped Mamdani, Eric Adams' association with Trump. Yeah. And in New York, it's one of the most liberal cities in the country. Yeah. People are very well aware. Everything Lauren just said, everybody in New York feels that, understands it, and gets it the same way. And that's why Mamdani was such, had such a overwhelming support, because people are sick of this. This is Mamdani is a resistance candidate, is he not?
Yeah, that's correct. And I, exhibit number one is the awkward WPIX interview that Mayor Adams did with Tom Homan, the director of ICE, where I call the giggle heard around the world, where, I mean, it was just, as a Black man, I felt deeply injured by witnessing Tom Homan disrespect Mayor Adams on live TV the way he did. And Mayor Adams just giggled, yeah, and took it. And to me, that giggle is the response only of a completely captured and compromised person would make. You know, and so to me, that was a disqualifying moment for Eric Adams, and signaled the fact that, yeah, you know, given the very real threat of Donald Trump, because he's made clear he is going to use the full weight of the federal government, both legally and extra legally, in order to apply pressure on quote unquote blue cities with large Black populations and cities that he's calling quote unquote sanctuary cities, and he's going to terrorize these cities. And if we, you know, the other example is Mayor Brandon Johnson, you know, right, in Chicago. And he, along with Governor Pritzker, as well as folks in the community, stood strong, and Trump blinked, right? And so it does matter to have an administration that's willing to show up and defend your residents. You know, I think we also saw that with Mayor Baraka, right? Mayor Baraka, you know, he was willing to very, very early on say, it doesn't matter who my resident is. It doesn't matter if my resident is a immigrant or a citizen. They're my residents. It's my job to protect them and keep them safe against this federal government. And so I think that has been one of the factors that has led to so many people rallying around Mamdani.
Yes, very important. We have another caller. Caller, God bless you. What's your name? Do we? Maybe not. Maybe
go to the next one.
Okay, caller, God bless you. What's your name? Caller, you there? Turn your radio down.
We're going to go to the next one.
All right, well, you just go to the next one, Mike. You control that. Just go. Caller, God bless you.
Go right ahead. Caller, you're on.
All right. My name is Stan from Northern Virginia. Hey. My question is, can you hear me?
Yes. I hear you.
Okay, good. My question is, you know, we're talking about strength in politics and President Trump. I just cannot understand how he can continue to do these impeachable, clearly impeachable offenses, going to war against Iran, deploying bombers to Iran, clearly being in support of a genocide in Gaza, and just deploying troops in American cities. Why can't there be any backbone in Congress at all to get this man out of office? What do we have elected officials for if they cannot stop America turning into some nightmare where people are disappeared from the streets, like, you know, he is deploying Praetorian Guard all over the country. Why isn't there some action? I get these, send me $5, send me $30 for this cause and that cause.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop there.
Yeah.
But let me hear your response about just what can we do to get him out of office?
Maurice, you take that one first.
Okay, sure. Well, caller, I couldn't agree with you more that the actions of this president are deplorable, are in many ways illegal, are violate our Constitution. And, you know, impeachment is mainly a political process. And the president, his party has a majority in both houses. They had an opportunity after after January 6th to do the right thing. They chose not to, which shows you how captured the politicians in his party are, because many of them understood the same thing that you understood. But you asked another question, which is what we need to do today. I believe that there's a number of things that we need to do today. So, you know, many of us recently led the protests and organizing and boycotts against Sinclair, Nexstar, ABC, and Disney when they pulled Jimmy Kimmel off the air. And look, Jimmy Kimmel is a very wealthy, connected, famous white guy. So the reason why I felt it was really important to do that is because they crossed the line. And if we did not show up now and apply pressure where it matters the most often, and it matters with corporations and their corporate backers with their profit margin. And they needed to feel the heat, and they felt it, and then they backed down. And I think we should draw some lessons around the immediate things we need to do and look towards elections. I think, again, the New York election and how that fares, that's going to be an indicator about where this country goes, and also the 2026 elections. There's a reason. They know they're unpopular. There's a reason why they're trying to steal the election before any vote is cast, while they're trying to use gerrymandering in order to change the balance of power, even before people get to choose their representative. So we need to turn out like never before every single election, including the congressional elections coming up in 2026, so that the Republicans and MAGA won't have a majority in the House. And there is a slim possibility, if you line everything up, that they could also lose their majority in the Senate. And we have to organize the largest electoral movement between now and November 2026 in order to do that. And in between, we need to do small and large actions like boycotts, like the Target boycott and others, like the organizing, like those protests, to show show that there's a movement against this.
Yeah.
One more and 3 minutes left.
We have one more call?
Yes, and 3 minutes left. Yep.
Okay, real quick. Let's go ahead and get this next caller. God bless you. Go right ahead. Mm-hmm. Call, are you there? Okay, I guess call's not there. Folks, this has been a very, very interesting conversation, obviously. Mm-hmm. Lauren, let me give you some closing thoughts, and then we'll hear from Maurice. It's interesting, too, because Maurice, before you came on, we were talking about the Virginia gubernatorial race. I don't see a whole lot of difference now these days between Winsome Earle Sears and Eric Adams, but that's just me. Maybe that's harsh. That's harsh, but maybe not, because you talk about the man giggling and skinning and grinning. Lauren, closing thoughts. Please.
Well, Eric Adams was, in fact, compromised by, of course, his connection with the Trump people. Interestingly enough, for Winsome Sears, they're ignoring her. The official MAGA is ignoring Winsome Sears. And okay. She has not gotten the endorsement from Donald Trump and probably will not.
Why is that? Why is that?
She criticized because she really isn't a MAGA Republican. She criticized Donald Trump and basically said he should get off the stage only like a few years ago. And they know about it. And, of course, they remember that.
Has she asked for the Epstein files?
No, she hasn't brought that up. It has come up, but it's not a type of issue that's a Virginia issue. It's a Stan's point. It's really about voting. And Stan's point, I'm sure Stan in Northern Virginia is probably early voted already. There's probably going to be a wave election in Virginia. I can't speak for New Jersey, but I can speak for Virginia. There's probably going to be a wave election in the blue wave in the Democratic. And you're going to see it in New York. I suspect, obviously, it's two Democrats with Cuomo and Mondami, but you're going to see the more left-leaning Democrat win, and that means something.
Maurice, the polls are showing still Mondami ahead sizably. Am I wrong?
That's correct. Still double digits ahead, even with Eric Adams leaving the race, right? And that, to me, is an indication of the campaign that he's run from the very, very beginning. You know, Andrew Cuomo is behind in every single poll, even when it's head to head and the Republican is out of the race, Andrew Cuomo is still behind. And there's, you know, there's still several weeks to go. And I only could imagine that the momentum is going to build in Mamdani's direction.
And I never thought we could discount the charges that drove Cuomo out of office in the first place. You know,
I don't think
necessarily people have forgotten those. They're not really covered as much.
Yeah, they're covered less, but some of the same elected officials that ended up endorsing him, you know, initially in the primary, and they are the same folks when he had those, I think, disqualifying and disgraceful allegations, and very credible allegations by dozens of women.
20 seconds.
They opposed him and said that he was no longer fit for office. If those things were true then, they're true now.
At Maurice WFP, Lauren, real quick, where can people find you?
At LV Burke on X and Burke File on TikTok.
All right. Check them out, folks. Maurice and Lauren, thank you both for being here with us on Make It Plain.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.